Plenty of folks are running stateful workloads on Kubernetes, but how are they doing it, particularly with popular databases like Postgres? It turns out that operators can be pretty important, but which one is going to work best for you? In this episode of KubeFM, our guest, David Peck, shared his insights about all the different things related to running databases on Kubernetes, specifically if we're talking about Postgres, including the fears of data loss and the need for operators to provide best practices and robust security features. David also highlights the growing importance of self-service capabilities for Postgres management and distinguishes between production readiness and platform readiness, emphasizing scalability and support. If something that catches your attention is about, you know, navigating the complexities of database as a service or seeking to optimize Postgres for Kubernetes, this episode is packed with actionable insights you definitely won't want to miss. This episode of KubeFM is brought to you by LearnKates. LearnKates has been providing Kubernetes trainings to organizations all over the world since 2017. Courses are instructor-led, the material is 60% practical and 40% theoretical. They are given online as well as in person, in groups, as well as also for individuals. And you have access to the course material for the rest of your life. For more information, check out learnkates.io. Now, let's get into the episode. David, welcome to KubeFM. Can you tell us a little bit about what you do and who you work for?
So my name is David Peck, and currently I have recently changed job. Currently I work at Wrike. So maybe you know, it's a software as a service for the best place for your project, something like this. And my role is currently in the infrastructure. So I help to manage like 3 data centers, 2 on-prem, 1 in the cloud. And my role is also mixed some slightly with the backend development, especially the reliability part, which is kind of interesting. Except for this, I do have a small startup that is called Sestra Emmy in Czech. In English, it would be something like the Nurse Emmy. So basically what we do, we try to connect the patients with their GPs through some secure channel and many more around this, because we are trying to promote the e-health in the Czech Republic somehow. We also have some footprint in the Slovak market as well.
Fantastic. And how did you get into cloud native in the first place? What was that story like?
Oh, well, with the my startup, basically we have already some track record on AWS mostly. So we run on AWS Lambdas. If I can make a small advertisement, this is the technology I like very much like. Serverless from the start, which is very interesting. And like a lot of technologies that we have needed to be evolved because our stack is based on Scala. So this is the JVM language. And basically we needed to pioneer a lot of stuff to have, for example, the serverless application like running smoothly with minimum cold startups, etc. We also use a lot of other AWS tools like Aurora, etc. So the cloud native, I would say, was very natural for me. I have always like wanted to push or maybe transfer the applications I write on the VMs to the containers. When I was finally able to do it, I understood that, for example, we are able to use Docker Compose to run them. Then it was not enough, so we have moved to Docker Swarm. And the last step was, of course, Kubernetes. So it was kind of challenging because I think that I've like discouraged everyone from Kubernetes for at least maybe 2 years because it's so vast, it's so difficult to understand. I bought several books on it, this subject, and basically maybe after 5 of them, I like started to consider that this might also be somehow a way for us. So let's say the cloud native for me at least was slightly slow or maybe painful, I would say even. But currently I'm all in for cloud native. We all also run some stateful workloads, especially Postgres in Kubernetes. So we might share some details later on, guys.
Fantastic. That's great. Now, prior to this, what were you before becoming cloud native?
Well, Java enterprise developer, like for the business application, would be the best description when I started, probably. I also had some kind of a detour and was a manager for a while. So this was not very welcome for me, but still a very interesting work experience. And currently, I would call myself an infrastructure engineer. And this is, from my perspective, the best way or the best value you can currently offer on the market, I think. I also have some track record with the mainframe, especially IBM's AX, which was unfortunately like 2 years ago, so quite recent one because one of the customers used it. Also, I, for example, brought Oracle product called Forms to the container, which was very interesting 2 weeks operation itself, etc. So I have tried to like push cloud native boundaries, I guess, everywhere I could, even for the products that were totally not meant to be cloud native, but technically it is possible. And also, for example, with this application, it was possible to some extent. In my opinion, the infrastructure is much more challenging nowadays than the business development, which I used before. So as it become kind of a chore or like business as usual thing for me, I just transferred slowly but steadily into this field, which I very much like. And maybe one of the things that before the cloud native, before my career was cloud native, was autoscaling, which I could have never done well. Typically, we have over-provisioned a lot and had many spare resources at the same time just to be ready for the rush hours or something like this. So for example, this is one of the transitions I also did, that I am now able to auto-scale my applications, I would say, quite well. Not perfectly, but quite well.
Just on the topic of auto-scaling really quickly, do you have any experience working with the CNCF project Keda?
Yes, also with Knative. So if you would like to talk about this a little more, we surely can. There are several options how to ask auto-scale. And they are all very interesting because this is not only around the pods or like creating more replicas of your pod. This is also about provisioning your nodes, for example, with Carpenter or some other challenges that are included, of course.
Now, it's no secret that the Kubernetes ecosystem moves very quickly. How do you stay up to date? I know you mentioned some resources previously, but what works best for you? Books, mm-hmm. blogs, videos, podcasts?
Mm-hmm. Like I personally try to stay up to date with the Kubernetes, for example, with Cloud Native PG and some other projects that I personally very much like, that I try to read change notes on the at least major releases, something like this. Although, you know, this is getting difficult by each version. This is a very vast topic, so you can easily miss something that is important. And that is a lot of stuff that maybe it's not very usable for me. But at least for the top projects, I try to do or be so thorough with this. Otherwise, for my most like trusted resource is typically the conferences and their videos there. So I very much like the format that someone is able to show you like the basic use case for it, advocate, and also explain to you why with this decision and what is useful around this stuff, and not just read some documentation. I also like to listen to several podcasts when I run on or stroll with my daughter or something like this. So this is also a useful tool, I guess, just to get some kind of a general knowledge and to understand if there's some new hype, for example, that you should check out or something like this.
And I saw also that you mentioned that you're a Kubestronaut. I think you're the first Kubestronaut that we've had on KubeFM. First of all, congratulations. But for some people that don't know what that is, can you explain what that means to be a Kubestronaut?
Mm-hmm. So the CNCF, as you probably know, is trying to push the education part, and they have created, I don't know how many, maybe 10 different exams that you can take. Five of them are crucial, and they are, if you take five of these, maybe all of them are about Kubernetes, but three of them are with a hands-on experience. If you take these five, you will become a Kubestronaut, and except for, of course, the fame of your neighborhood, etc., you might get a nice blue jacket in the future, probably.
Well, congratulations. A lot of hard work there. Now, if you could go back in time and share one career tip with your younger self, what would it be?
Oh, I may disappoint a few folks, but I didn't like the managerial experience, especially because I was working for a large Czech company, and it was very challenging mentally for me. So even though it brought like very unique skill of sets for me, like the soft skill and project management stuff, I still would probably advise my younger self not to do it and just be the technical guy, something like this.
Now, as part of our monthly content discovery, we found this article series that you wrote, DBaaS in 2024, which Postgres operator for Kubernetes to select for your platform. You've been consulting with various organizations about Postgres on Kubernetes. What recurring challenges do you see teams facing?
Mm-hmm. So I think that for a lot of areas around Kubernetes, there is no single winner, let's say, that you should like for sure go there and pick. Maybe we have Cilium for networking, I guess. Maybe in MySQL world, Vitis, etc. But in many many areas, there is no clear winner. And this is especially true in Kubernetes for Postgres area, let's say. You know, Postgres itself is not a product. Maybe it's much more like a Linux core and you need to have a lot of tooling around it. The guys at the Postgres community are doing like terrific job extending it slightly, especially in the newer releases, I would say. But still, this is the reason why it is so difficult to choose, because there are a lot of tools how to run Postgres, even on VMs, what like mindset you should have around it, etc. What are the best practices? This is like widely different, and there are maybe even, I would say, something like different schools of how to run Postgres properly. And the guys fight over each other with some flame wars like this. This is like the topic is not settled yet, I would say. So, of course, naturally, there is no single operator to rule them or something like this. So I think that the good thing is that the teams start with having a database in the Kubernetes. They don't have the database as the first workload there, which is also very good. The bad thing, I would say, that typically the companies, what I saw, are quite afraid to try to put like any serious data into Kubernetes. Maybe one example, they are able to put Redis there for caching, no worries. They are able to offload there some second level storage, which they can reprovision like in a few hours or so, like the full text index or something like this. But with the primary data, they are very careful, I would say. And this is, of course, very slowing the adoption. So typically when they do put database into Kubernetes, there are like three very different ways how it might go. So either you have the developers or the DevOps department that is like pulling the strings and they say, we will do it, no problem, it's so easy to do it. Or you typically have a very conservative DBA guy who likes his VMs, likes his high availability tools around Postgres, and is like very skeptical around Kubernetes idea, Kubernetes world, and of course, no way we are going next to Kubernetes with our main database, something like this. So I can see that these are very different worlds because the first one that you rush it typically mean that you have then some problem at scale. The second one, it probably mean that you may never get there with your DBA unless he won't retire or something like this. So I would typically blame the companies like in general that they don't have a proper testing tools for the their, let's say, infrastructure setup, Postgres especially. So, for example, the developers are like very good at testing the application with various tests on various levels. But when you like move one step up to the infrastructure world, the testing is somehow limited. They don't know how to do it, etc. So what I have seen is that the company is able to run like dozens of very small, typically microservice level databases with just the developers or the DevOps guys, and they may not even be any like Postgres or any DBA that is helping them, and they say we are completely fine with it, and they may even run this in production small scale unless they are getting to some like scalability issues on Postgres like for maybe months, maybe even for a few years, very well, I guess, something like this. And the other extreme is that the company is still using some kind of monolithic database, has many databases on a single Postgres cluster that share resources, and the DBA like clients, this is the most cost-efficient thing to do. We should not move away from this perspective. We have this maybe slightly tested from the disaster recovery perspective or something like this. I would, because I have also some experience with Oracle, so this is the, let's say, Oracle approach, I would say, that is somehow stuck in the past maybe, but still this is very relevant because just teams worry about the data. This is their like family silver. They don't want to lose it or like put it into jeopardy anyhow, of course.
Given these challenges, it seems there's a need to define clear requirements. What should teams consider when building a Postgres platform?
So from my perspective, they need an operator, right? They don't want to create their own because running Postgres is not very company specific. Like it is just not, let's say. So at the operator role, it has or it should have some kind of autopilot. So it means that it is able to help you with the provisioning of the base cluster. Operators should have the best practices baked in, of course. We are talking about the security, but also some like opinion. What is the configuration of the cluster? What are some like limits on the number of clients? And I don't know what, like all of this stuff should be baked in somehow. The networking should be solved for you because you can either select, for example, the Kubernetes like native networking with the service, or you can go with some PG bouncer like PG pooling, etc., which are like very different. And this is also another topic on itself, I would say. And typically, currently, people search or need to use some extensions. Maybe one example for all of them would be PG Vector, which is getting kind of popular when you are doing any machine learning stuff or something like this. So another chapter, I would say, is self-service. So this is very similar probably to everything you offered to your team. So if you have a dedicated platform team or something like this, you want your developer teams to have a self-service to like a large extent. So it is very easy for them just with some YAML or some other tool that you use in your company to provision, but also edit the databases. The way they should do it should be like single click, something like this. And all like most difficult operations that you offer should also be very easy to do. And you should like, offer very similar approach that, for example, a large hyperscalers offer. So apologies for another add to AWS, but for example, if you have seen how they do, they are able to provision a database next to your original one as a clone with something like a blue-green deployment, they call it, and you are very easily able to switch with minimum downtime. So for example, this is the like this might be for some companies a killer feature that might be useful, but for order to teams to use it, they need to have it very easily like achievable, etc. Typically, I would say the self-service means that you don't need much Postgres experience, although you will typically need one later on. This is like inevitable, I guess. Nice feature, of course, is to start your database from the backup. So for example, one of my clients is able to reprovision the staging databases anytime they want. Basically, they just drop the or delete the YAML of the cluster and it gets instantly reprovisioned from the production with some anonymization, etc. This is a very nice feature. Of course, some level of cloning must be very useful. Typically, teams want to know what is happening inside a database, and especially when the database is failing. So if the operation is like normal, business as usual, you don't need to go inside the database at all. If there is any problem, I don't know, the database is overloaded, your disks don't have enough I/O, etc. You have some, I don't know, strange SQL that is like killing the cluster, you just want to know. And in Postgres, unfortunately, there are very different levels what might get wrong, either from the pod perspective, from the Postgres itself, through some locking or through some even Postgres issues. So the observability part is like very significant here that you for the team are able to provision some kind of resume. What is happening? What is current problem or possible problem? Something like this to not to overburden them. So they would need some Postgres experience and expertise at all, typically. It's very nice if you can offer the same level of self-service, same tools for the development or staging and also the production environments. This is the top level goal, although I think that this is kind of hard to achieve nowadays. And last chapter would be about the maturity of the approach, about the operator. So it should be production ready. It's not worth it to waste your time investing in some tooling or some platform that will not go into production. So I'm a big fan of course, some incremental development. So once you have even some small increment, minimum viable product or anything that just can go into a production, even though it is still on one leg, let's do it and iterate from there so you can get the feedback as easy as or as soon as possible and as easy as the first team on board, something like this.
You mentioned operator features as one of the core requirements. What specific capabilities matter for teams that are evaluating operators?
Mm-hmm. So typically, the teams look at the YAML, at the CRD that the operators offer. All of the operators offer some level of CRD nowadays, so this is the same topic. They are different, and of course, they offer different capabilities. I would say that for bootstrapping your own simple cluster, every YAML I have seen is somehow easy and understandable at the first sight. When you get to the advanced topic, so for example, if you would like to provision your database as a clone of the production, but only bringing this part of users, these databases, then running some anonymization script, etc., this is where it gets complicated. So maybe if you evaluate, look at the second day or look around this more difficult use cases than the, just the basic Hello World examples. Typically, HA, like high availability, is of course some input you need to evaluate. Typically, it means you should be able to tell what are the parameters when your primary pod dies, when you lose PVC, if the operator is able to recover, how fast does it take to recover, etc. It is very useful to have this measured like end-to-end from your further perspective of your application, so you very well understand what will happen, not like in general to the cluster itself, but to your application. What does it mean to your customers? What SLO, let's say, can you offer with this approach, etc.? So typically, I would say that a lot of operators offer also a good security practices. So they are able to create users for you. Typically, they store the user credential information as a secret in Kubernetes. Typically, they are able also to provision TLS certificates. So you can, like by default, switch to TLS. They are able to rotate the certificates themselves, which is pretty nice. The observability is kind of a different topic here because here, there are two parts of it. One is Postgres itself. So there is a Postgres exporter that works pretty well. It's kind of standardized. And then there is a operator exporter. And this is like very different what you are able to see. I mean, here you need to understand, typically we want to like evaluate or set some alerting, for example, for this. You need to understand how the operator itself works. What are the conditions? What are, I don't know, the timeouts when it starts to do certain action, like, for example, for recovery or something like this. So you understand what you are measuring here. Also, like maybe even for the first part of Postgres itself, there are very different, let's say, schools of Postgres, what you should check, how the dashboard should look like, etc. So this is itself a very vast topic, unfortunately. What I'm currently missing are some kind of best practices, I would say, that the operator would also offer for the Postgres configuration itself. Maybe we are getting here to the topic of the autopilot, because technically a lot of these operators offer some level of autopilot. And what does it mean in this context? Typically, your cluster is on autopilot, meaning that they are able to create primary pod. They are able to create several replicas. When one of your replicas fail, they are able easily to reprovision it, like without you ever knowing. They are able to fail over, so you give a command to switch master, to switch primary, or fail over, meaning that in case of the primary pod failing, it automatically switches without you even knowing. So this level is in all of the operators, I would say, of a high quality. But from the perspective of Postgres, it's completely the other way around. I don't know how, but I think that the Postgres community is somehow conservative, I would say. And typically, they don't bump up the configuration values with each new version. So a lot of defaults for Postgres are set in a way that is not useful for running production at all. And I can like name a few on the memory side. And it maybe is not, let's not go too into details here, but let's say that the operators like tolerate this and also don't switch the knobs that you should probably have. So for example, when you, it doesn't matter if you, for example, start a pod that has 1 gig or 10 gigs of RAM, typically you don't get any configuration inside the Postgres to adjust to it. And of course, the Postgres might behave very differently. And as I mentioned, default is what some of the Postgres users call the teapot size. So it is for a very small workload and it can like degrade performance pretty easily. So this is maybe one of the gotchas also when you use the operator, you are not aware of this fact, you are not aware of the Postgres default. This can like bite you like significantly very soon. I have also seen recently on the PGConf of EU that a lot of consultancies promote the operators as your virtual DBA. So this is very interesting from one perspective, because of course the operator can do a lot of things as your DBA, install the database, back it up or restore the backup, etc. Like all of these things you can go just declaratively through YAML, but especially when you get to some real Postgres problems. I don't know, for example, you have a large table that has a lot of bloat in it, so you are not able to vacuum it properly. It needs to typically to adjust some auto vacuum settings. The memory is something that I have mentioned that will bite you like literally on the second day of production probably. There are a lot of topics that is like not currently held handled well by the operator, and I personally would very much like to see some evolution here. But as I mentioned again, the Postgres community is kind of against it, so we will see where this might get.
Now, the other pillar that you mentioned, I know you talked about this a little bit already, but the other pillar that you mentioned was self-service. Many teams struggle with this particular concept in practice. And to you, you know, what does proper self-service look like for Postgres on Kubernetes?
Well, I would describe it with very easy conversation, something like, hey, I want highly available Postgres of T-shirt size L with 100 gigs of storage. Just make it happen. I don't care about anything. So now it's done. And here is your endpoint. Here are your secrets, certificates, etc. So this is the self-service for me. Of course, there is much more under the hood. For example, how to connect to the cluster with your application, etc., etc. But let's say that for basic operations, like really basic, like cluster creation, reprovisioning of the nodes, etc., backup and restore and basic disaster recovery, you should not have any more Postgres expertise than just adjusting the YAML. I would say something that is would be very, very nice. For the production, it should look the same. So it should not mean that you use some other tool just for production, or some of the DBAs are using PSQL to adjust something for the production that is not available in your development cluster. This is very important because it really pushes you to try to express everything possible through the YAML and not do any manual interventions that are, of course, not that scalable. If there is some UI, typically web UI, how you can control the YAML, this is very welcomed. Of course, even though this is kind of a simple form, I guess, you can, of course, use Backstage for this or something like this if you are fancy. If you are not, I have even seen of a company running 800 clusters that is using Jenkins with the custom force for their users to adjust it. So anything that your customers or developers are accustomed to is okay here, just so they are able to do the change.
Understanding these requirements is one thing, but implementing them probably another. Before teams commit to building their own database as a service, what critical questions should they be asking themselves?
You know, I say it quite a lot. I would say that there is some curse in the world that the developers just develop. They are so eager to just start the development and don't think about the requirements and some bigger picture here. At least it's from what I've seen. So I can like, I did it many times myself, so I'm also to blame here. But it's like a typical something as a service, in this case, Postgres as a service versus make something your own decision. So first thing is, can we even use remote Postgres instead of some local ones? I mean, for example, isn't there some issue with the GDPR that data needs to be stored somewhere locally? Can we offload them somewhere even? Do we need someone to, for example, do security approval before we start a new cluster? Something like this might be very down-to-earth problem that you face, and you just can't do automation unless your security team will approve it. So can you make them part of the process naturally somehow? Or maybe you are not able to do DB as a service at all with this. Typically, I would require have all the workloads of a similar manner. So if you are running OLTP, OLAP, and some machine learning stuff, probably this is not this is too wide for a DB as a service. You will need Postgres experience. You will of course need Kubernetes experience, and I would say a lot of it, because everyone probably can remember how difficult it was to onboard Kubernetes, how difficult it was to get everything right. Here in this service, you will run only in Kubernetes, and if something goes wrong, of course, it will go wrong at a scale, because you are probably not doing this to provision one database. You will have at least a few dozens of them. So if you make any mistake, any, for example, bad decision how the API is constructed, this will definitely bite you back like very significantly. So I would maybe summarize this to one simple or several simple questions. If you would like to build for several years to come your Postgres as a service and keep investing it next to your main products, do you intend to treat it as a product yourself and your developers as a customers? And is it really feasible among all the alternatives? So if you answer that yes to all these questions, just go ahead and do it. But I think that most of us won't.
Very fair point. Many teams might be reconsidering their approach at this point. What are the alternatives to running Postgres on Kubernetes?
So typically, this is very well-defined Postgres as a service. You can go with the large cloud providers, of course, if you like them. There are many traditional consultant companies that have their own offering, either some cloud service, or you can, of course, let them install something in your infrastructure with their parameters, typically with some enterprise features and some enterprise support, which might be also very feasible to you. Why not? There are several projects that offer serverless Postgres as a service, which, at least for me, is a very interesting concept, because this might be very interesting for some, let's say, low volume webhook type stuff in the future. Also, I was very surprised how stable these things are, which is very interesting, let's say. Some of the providers offer features like database branching. So maybe if you are aware of this, you are able basically to thin clone your database, and it's like in Git. So you just create another branch that has very same starting point as your main. So you can easily experiment, for example, try to adjust the queries or tune some parameters in a different branch and not affect your master or main branch in this case. And this is a very interesting approach. Even this could be even run in production. But so this is also some alternative that people might be interested in because of the possible benefits that it brings. Maybe only wonderful advice I will get here is that you should not mix managed service with your Kubernetes offering or something like this, because typically, at least in my experience, it leads to that you basically provide two different levels of quality for Postgres. One is for your stagings. Typically, this is from the pricing perspective, cheaper Kubernetes something as a service, and then there is the cloud provider's real stuff that is a production. And this is not good because typically they have very different parameters, especially when it goes to performance and also some building know-how, how to run it in long term. So just don't mix it. If you are okay with something managed as a service, try it for every workload. Think if this will be feasible even from the price perspective for your development and staging environments or not.
For teams that decide that they do want to proceed with Kubernetes, there are several operator options that are currently available. How are these operators typically categorized?
Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure if this is like standardized yet, but let's say that I see at least four different families. So first of all is the most trivial one, that you run a single instance. I can put here the BitNamiChar operator. There is not much second day operational support for it. And it's kind of difficult to run in the long term. Maybe it's very good for some demos or for some to spin it up as some example. But on the long term, this won't work well because Postgres just does not have this tool in the core. Then there is a stateful set, let's say family. So you have one stateful set that can grow or shrink. It has several drawbacks. Maybe I would mention here Jakub Scholz's talk on what is wrong with the stateful set, because this is the maintainer of Streamzy. This is the tool to run Kafka, and basically they needed to go away from the stateful sets and let the operator create pods on their own with their own conditions. And he mentions a lot of good arguments why this was like significant and what it brought at the end. The third would be definitely the Petronis family. Petroni is a high availability tool that is heavily used outside of the on the VMs. I would say it is a de facto standard, but this brings a significant challenge because Petroni works as a Python wrapper script around your Postgres. And basically it uses etcd, or in this case, Kubernetes control plane, as some kind of a source of truth. So it is able to do all the stuff. It does it typically very well. I mean, the highly availability failovers, switchovers, reprovisioning of replicas, etc. But for example, imagine that you have a pod that is running some Python wrapper that run Postgres as a child. And it is very difficult to understand, for example, what is the status of the pod. So in my world, this means that someone lifted and shifted pre-Kubernetes VM approach that might work well for some, but still this is not, let's say, cloud native. And the last category, of course, is something like cloud native. So what I mean by this is that basically you use the primitives of Kubernetes or some maybe database that is able to run cloud natively there by default, and you don't have any middle layers between it.
Now, teams often want to start small with Postgres on Kubernetes, and then things immediately snowball from there. Based on your experience, why does this approach typically fail?
Mm-hmm. So I don't mean that to start with anything is a bad idea, right? Especially here, because you want to try it, you want some proof of concept or MVP, how do we call it? You just want to see if it is able to run at all. So you just need to start somewhere, right? But what is typically the problem is, if this is not some kind of a systematic effort, this can fail pretty easily, as with a lot of other stuff. It can have a bad naming conventions. You are provisioning something that your security team does not understand, or didn't even approve it because you told them, okay, this is some kind of playground area. And of course, at some point, it outgrows, it needs to go to production, and then you need to face all these issues. So I would say that if you take this seriously as a technology that just needs to be evaluated, that of course needs to be in a, or have some kind of a life cycle for this evaluation, and you are aware where in the project, in that sense, you are currently. So if you are able to go to production, or maybe not yet, and you still need some security approval homework to do, this is fine with anything you will try. I would say that, so this is cultural dependent. If your company culture is that you are pushing this like correctly project wise, I would say typically there are no problems there from what I've seen. I think that the problem is that you need, of course, a large amount of Kubernetes, typically a cloud, and also Postgres perspective on the things. And this is difficult to get. So sometimes developers have very simple requirements here. They just want their Postgres to store the data. And it is very difficult for them to voice all of the other requirements that may be significant from the security, infrastructure, or high availability, or anything else standpoint. So if you will be able to get these people in the same room, I can guarantee you that something good might come of it. And maybe there will come less people in the end, but still, this is a useful exercise to do. Definitely, I would like suggest it. Because if you do not do this, people will become scared of going to production for one reason or another. So from the developer's perspective, they will say something like, nah, we have only small scale Postgres here, right, for our staging, even though we have tested it, we are not sure how this will happen, and we can't help you guys running it in operations on infrastructure department because we don't know what options for high availability, for example, of process there are. From the other hand, if you have a DBA, as I mentioned, which is typically like very conservative, likes their patroni on VMs or something like this, again, he needs to be to some extent a part of the development process so he can like oversee and supervise the Postgres operator clusters created for the staging. He needs to understand what tooling he has if something goes wrong, etc. There are a lot of myths that still are very valid. I was very surprised that even, for example, in 2024, I was at a conference and discussing that with a person that he does not believe that container running Postgres will have very similar performance as running without it. So still there are this myth that needs to be like busted, and this is taking maybe too much time, I guess. From the DBA's perspective, what is missing currently most are more experiences, are more case studies, how it can be done. And typically DBAs are very afraid of the break glass scenario because, you know, if the operator will crash loop and you as a DBA have only PSQL to connect to it, you don't understand Kubernetes well, what to do now? So typically it needs your DBA to understand Kubernetes to some extent, etc., etc. So it's a long process, I would say, not to get this incorrectly, even if you use operator and get some help and have all the knowledge inside your teams.
There are numerous tutorials that are out there that promise simple Postgres deployments on Kubernetes. When I Googled, the first result was a DigitalOcean tutorial on how to run Postgres. What makes these approaches problematic?
Well, I think that I have hit the same tutorial. So I, of course, did it and I've instantly lost my data, right? Now, maybe just to explain, the tutorial is very interesting because it looks like very professional. However, it suggests that you run your Postgres cluster as a deployment of three replicas, which basically means that you will share the data directory. And this is very interesting because Postgres, of course, is not to... It just can't do it. You will get very strange errors like immediately. What is even more interesting is that on the VM level, you would not be able to do it because Postgres has some built-in checks, like store the PID file somewhere or something like this. But on containers, you are not able to use this correctly. So maybe just go with some operator and just don't try to do this yourself. That is probably the best you can do.
The Bitnami Helm chart is often seen as a middle ground between DIY and full operators. What are its practical limitations?
Mm-hmm. I like Bitnami myself, like a project. I've used many tools over there. But typically when you go deeper and look inside the Helm charts, it's a madness, right? There are so many options you can use. So the Helm charts are not usable for me, for example, to bootstrap from there and have some adjustments I need or something like this. So the worst problem is with the basic Helm chart, the second day operation, because the Helm chart has a different set of pods, as one as a primary, others as replicas, but basically it is not able to keep your cluster up and running. So it is very easy to get it into a state that there is some problem and it just starts a pod. The pod does not connect correctly to primary. It does not stream data from there or something like this. So basically your cluster is somehow disconnected and you have no observability except from some log messages that go inside the log. So you might check them or might not. It's very fragile, I would say. There is an option to run Bitnami, of course, with the Rep Manager, but I would also suggest this as some kind of a legacy tool and don't go there. So if you will run the vanilla Bitnami chart, typically you can get to some numbers like the primary port restart will take 2 to 3 minutes of outage. If you restart your replica port, in case you have only one, it takes 1 to 2 minutes. If you have multiple of them, the Kubernetes networking will work well here, so we will get like minimum downtime. But still, operators in general can do much better than this. And of course, Postgres itself can do much better than this because it's built in with some tools for failovers, which are like almost instant, maybe under 1 second downtime if you configure this correctly. So definitely don't start with the Bitnami. If I may give a piece of advice, even though you like this project in general, go for some advanced operator.
Throughout this discussion, you've touched on various aspects of running Postgres at scale. Could you clarify the distinction between being production ready and platform ready?
Sure. So production ready basically means that you know what you are doing and you can run in production for several days your one instance of Postgres cluster. And this is very different from platform ready because this means that you're able to scale it. So let's say you run, 100 instances for 5 years. And you as a team that is responsible for running this at scale can do all the basic operations for your customers, for your developers. So you can upgrade minor version, which might be easy. You can also migrate the major version, which might not be that easy because some of the operators does not support it yet. You need to integrate this through your DevOps tools and to your stack. You need to integrate this with your security stack typically. And you will also need to provide some kind of long-term support for this to tell people, okay, we are, for example, stuck with this version because of the operator connection, etc. So platform ready is running at scale and just imagine what might go wrong. For example, if you have some bad automation around the upgrades, etc. This might have like kind of disaster results, not just for one team and one pod, but for most of your company, basically.
Well, congratulations on making it this far and for providing such an in-depth amount of knowledge when it comes to running Postgres on Kubernetes. I read somewhere that your wife wasn't convinced by the blue color of your Kubestronaut jacket. Does she like it now? And can you tell us about your journey on how you got certified?
Mm-hmm, for sure. So the blue jacket is something you should get when you will become a Kubestronaut. And the blue color, let's say, is very vivid, I would say, something like this. So my wife just merely suggested that unless I wear something more elegant, she won't go with me, like basically anywhere, something like this. So, but still, I like it. I would wear it proudly when I get it. For the certifications, I like them also as a tool or as a learning tool because I am very productive when I set myself a date, for example, for the exam. So I just know that I need to get all the documentation in my head until this date. So I am ready. I am not the person that will just try it and see how it goes, something like this. I typically like over-prepare. And so this is the perfect scenario for me to have a tight schedule and do it this way. I even think that I was the first person to get the current, all the CNCF certifications. So a lot of them I would highly recommend, especially those that have some kind of hands-on part, because I very much like this idea that there is some task and if you just pass it, you will also pass the exam. So I definitely recommend this.
What's next for you?
Oh, well, my wife is delivering a baby in 2 or 3 weeks or something like this. So probably for the next year, I have my schedule rather full, I would say.
All right. And what's the best way for people to get in touch with you?
I would suggest LinkedIn. Definitely this one.
Okay. It's what worked for us. So I can definitely speak to that from experience. Well, David, thank you so much for sharing your time and experience, knowledge with us today. Look forward to seeing the following parts in your blog series, because I believe there are 4 or 5 more that are coming out.
Yes, hopefully so.
All right, we'll link that in the show notes. Thanks so much for joining us on KeepFM. We'll speak to you soon. Take care.
Take care.